head as high as you can, high enough to see who you are, little man. Life sometimes is cold and cruel, maybe no one else will tell you, so remember that you are black gold, black gold.
Program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Tyra Banks for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Oprah Daily. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Oprah Daily. Holiday traditions matter, but so does knowing when to change them. Our blended family's rituals have become suffocating. Now we focus on joy and connection. And this article is by Heather Amy O'Neill. Waking up on Christmas morning in the Hamptons with my two sons, their father, his husband, my ex-wife, and my new wife doesn't exactly fit the mold of a conventional holiday tradition. Nor is it the kind of thing that happens overnight. It took us years of building, breaking, and rebuilding together. Our little or not so little modern family started in 2007 when Abby and I had our son Tommy with our friend Tim as a donor. At the time, we didn't know any other gay families, so there was plenty we had to work out by ourselves, including the holidays. We made plans to visit Tim's sister in Pennsylvania for a Christmas fair, spend Christmas Day with my family, and celebrate New Year's Eve with Abby's parents. We also wanted to create a tradition of our own and eventually landed on Christmas Eve Mass at St. Luke's in the West Village, followed by dinner. During the hustle of the holidays, this became an important time for the four of us to be together, and the tradition carried us through the first few years of Tommy's life. Tim, an interior designer, would deck out his apartment as though Santa had visited a day early to drop off presents, complete with a plate of half-eaten cookies and a letter for Tommy. Just as our second son, Tio, was born, Tim met Glenn. We welcomed Glenn into the fold and were thrilled Tim had found such a great partner. But beneath the surface, there were cracks in our growing family. While Tim and Glenn were falling in love, my marriage to Abby was falling apart. In many ways, we were better suited to be friends than partners, and after 12 years together, we could no longer make it work. Abby and I divorced shortly after Tio was born, and we shared custody of the boys. Regardless of what a family looks like, divorce is disruptive. Even when necessary, it's a miserable, gut-wrenching experience. I was the one to initiate it, and this created lingering tensions with both Abby and Tim. That first year, Tio and I didn't attend the Christmas Eve dinner because he was sick. I was sad he would miss the tradition, but in truth, I also appreciated having an excuse to stay home and avoid some of the strain. By the following Christmas, I was in a new relationship with my now wife, Caroline. Things were still tense with Abby and Tim, and this time there was no pretense that we'd all be together for the holidays. Instead, Abby took the boys to Tim's for Christmas Eve, and Caroline and I had them on Christmas Day. Holidays were now separate, a shift we all grieved in our own ways. Though Abby and I managed to maintain a polite relationship as co-parents, Tim and I barely spoke anymore. This was devastating to me. He had been one of my closest friends and was the father of my children. But I was also busy and distracted by a new relationship, working, and raising young kids. When COVID-19 hit, something softened. In our bubble, the tension between Abby and me eased. By then, 7 years had passed since our divorce. With our world quieter and smaller during the lockdowns, drop-offs turned to April spritzes in Abby's backyard, a shared Mother's Day dinner with all the moms, and board game nights with the boys. Abby and I were able to remember and appreciate the friendship we once had, and she and Caroline got to know each other more. Inevitably, this softening made me think of Tim. I had always figured there would be more time to repair what had been broken between us, but when a childhood friend died unexpectedly, I was forced to face what I already knew. There isn't always more time. I reached out to Tim and was relieved when he received me with warmth and grace. We both agreed that what happened to us wasn't what we'd intended or wanted, and we promised to change that immediately. People talk about how time can heal, which I think is certainly true. But time can also harden our stances and narratives. It amazed me then, and still does, how picking up the phone can alter the course of a relationship, and in our case, a family. The reconnection didn't take long. We had all grown in significant ways and were finally ready to look forward. Not long after, Caroline and I attended Tim and Glenn's wedding with Abby and the boys, and later that year we joined Christmas Eve dinner. Tommy and Tia were thrilled to have us all together, and so were we. We opened presents, ate spaghetti and meatballs, and laughed plenty, and toasted to health and reconciliation. That was 5 years ago. This past fall, Tommy started college, so we're doing something different for the holidays. Instead of dinner at Tim and Glenn's apartment in Manhattan, we're all spending the night at their house in the Hamptons. And for the first time, we'll wake up together on Christmas morning. Abby is pushing for matching pajamas. I'm not sold. Tim wants to cook a roast. Tommy is lobbying to keep the spaghetti and meatballs. Glenn and I vote for opening presents in the evening. No one agrees. And Caroline plans to make her Southern family's homemade eggnog. No complaints there. Like any family, opinions abound, and we're constantly learning how to navigate our differences together. Tim's father was the Episcopalian Bishop of Newark, and one of the wisest and kindest people I've ever known. At a sermon years ago, he encouraged the congregation to not underestimate the importance of traditions, not simply for tradition's sake, but because they offer us a chance to pause and take stock of what we have, what we've lost, and what, if anything, we can change. I was much younger then. I thought I understood this advice and would never struggle to honor it. Life would test me, as it does, but I'm grateful that his words have proven to be true. Even when we wander, traditions give us a way back home. Five small ways to cope with holiday grief. This article is by Rebecca Gumer. The season can still shine, even in the depths of sorrow. Here are a few gentle tips to see you through. My father has been gone for 8 years, but last night I dreamt he helped me set the table for Thanksgiving, wrote New York Times bestselling author Beth Revis recently on Threads. Response to her post was swift and heartfelt, the image of her departed loved one resonating with those of us who are either coping with a recent loss or feel that particular weight of holiday grief year after year. I was 28 when my older sister died from breast cancer. 2 years later, my infant son Cooper suffered complications after a heart surgery and died suddenly on a cold December night. My grandmother died from cancer 2 years after that. By the time I was 32, I'd learned more than I ever wanted to know about navigating those hard days. The birthdays, anniversaries, and for many of us, the most challenging of all, the traditional family holidays of Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, and Christmas. These family-focused holidays are already front-loaded with impossibly idealized expectations that can lead to holiday blues. Add to that the isolating experience of grief, and it's no surprise that for many of us, the approaching season can trigger both joyful anticipation and low-level dread. Of course, being overcome with grief during the holidays isn't limited to loss through death. You may be weathering a painful divorce or a crushing family estrangement. Perhaps a parent has disappeared into the fog of dementia. Even losing a beloved pet can deeply affect our otherwise light-filled celebrations. First and foremost, I see you, but I've also gathered five suggestions to get you through the challenging days ahead so you don't have to grit your teeth and just get through it. The holidays can still shine, even in the midst of sorrow. Embrace doing less. Planning ahead and downsizing celebrations can help ease the stress of facing the holidays without a loved one. Some traditions, like sending holiday cards, can feel overwhelming when we're trying to come to terms with a loss. Instead, consider a group email, honest and straightforward, or social media or blog post to your followers with a short message sharing your good wishes. For other traditions, sit down with your family and brainstorm ways to simplify. Is it too much to get a live tree to decorate? Finding that perfect blue spruce was always Mom's favorite part. What about a tabletop tree with a few treasured ornaments instead? And if it's in your budget, maybe you skip your usual meal preparations. Many grocery stores provide an entire holiday feast with all the trimmings. Or make an easy casserole with sides that echo your meal traditions but minimize time in the kitchen. Try something new. When someone we love is missing, the thought of our closely held traditions can set off a grief spiral. Establishing new ones honors our beloved family member while acknowledging that we must move forward without them, a necessary step in the grieving process. Get the family together to officially reframe the ritual. Grandpa always lit the menorah candle the first night, but this year Mom will, Dad announces, or Nana always made the pecan pies and Jenny always helped. Now the torch, along with her Mrs. Santa apron, is officially being passed to Jenny. but keep some things the same. My father died around Hanukkah, says Barbara Waxman, a writer and retired English professor from the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. We lit candles for the 8 nights of Hanukkah, and then we reminisced about my father and ate our traditional latkes, which he really loved. In a similar vein, continuing to hang your sister's Christmas stocking long after her death reminds us that love pays no attention to time, but can continue and even grow as the years pass. When Cooper died, my son Liam was 2.5. The early childhood specialist at my church recommended keeping his routines as normal as possible, stressing the importance of consistency in the midst of our own upheaval. When Christmas morning came, we opened our presents and listened to carols while Cooper's baby picture sat on the mantel. Writer Carmel Breathnock, who has written a memoir about mother loss, shares, "My mother, Kathleen, got sick when I was 5 and died when I was 11. She spent my 9th Christmas in the hospital and my 10th sick in bed. After her mother died the following year, Carmel's father made sure to place the Christmas tree in the same corner as always, decorated with all the familiar ornaments. Right next to the tree, her father placed a framed photo of the family in happier times. It brought me joy to see the photo of the four of us together, my mother's smiling face offering comfort as we continued on without her," Carmel says. Lean on others. Remember, it's okay to ask for help. Call on friends who said, "Let me know if there's anything I can do," and take them up on their offer. Would they be willing to run to the grocery store for milk and eggs, or watch your toddler for a morning, or pick up your sister-in-law at the airport? Even a few tasks taken off your list can make a big difference in your outlook. Faith communities, hospice facilities, hospitals, and funeral homes often hold free grief recovery groups and can provide support and companionship for those dealing with loss. Those who are traversing the same difficult terrain can often be the best resources to each other. And for those times when everything feels like too much to bear, it's important to remember that professional counselors are just a phone call or telehealth appointment away. Katie Ray, a Jungian analyst, says, if you feel disconnected, like you're just going through the motions around the holidays, you're suffering. A therapist offers a safe place to find comfort and relief in not having to bear your grief alone. Remember, we never really lose those we love. When someone we love dies, the relationship doesn't end. It just moves from external to internal, says Ray. Grief allows us to connect once again to our love for that person and also to their love for us. This is a powerful and unexpected gift. Want to live longer? Do more squats. Seriously. And this article is by Michelle Ross. Lower body strength is linked to some surprising benefits. Here's how to get a leg up. How many deadlifts can you do? The answer might reveal how long you'll live. Okay, that's a bit of an oversimplification, but a growing body of research suggests that building muscle and strength in your legs could be a crucial way to increase your health span, aka the number of years you're physically and mentally fit. And women in midlife in particular should take notice. Unless you're hitting the weight room regularly, muscle loss accelerates during the menopause transition and impacts everything from fall risk to metabolic health. The good news, you can build strength at any age, and once you start, the cascade of mind-body benefits tend to accumulate quickly. Ahead, experts unpack the surprising power of leg strength and share tips on how to start working your lower body today. The leg longevity connection. While balanced, full body strength is the ultimate goal. Lower body resistance training gives you a real leg up on aging. Working large muscle groups like the quadriceps, gluteals, and hamstrings sends powerful signals throughout the entire body that improve metabolic health, heart health, brain function, and longevity, says Gabrielle Leon, a board-certified family physician and the author of The Forever Strong Playbook. Since the lower body makes up the largest share of your total skeletal muscle, she says that targeting this region can positively influence your health in a pretty profound way. For starters, strong leg muscles are crucial for balance and stability. They are behind your ability to walk, rise from a chair, and regain balance if you stumble. We take them for granted now, but when these functions decline, the risk of falls, fractures, frailty, and loss of independence rises sharply, warns Dr. Leone. And falls are far more serious than what you see in those goofy life alert commercials. CDC data shows that they're the leading cause of injury-related death in adults 65 and older. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. Better leg strength typically reflects better muscle quality, better motor control, higher daily activity levels, and better metabolic health, including blood sugar control and lower inflammation, Dr. Leone says. Improved metabolic health is especially important for reducing the likelihood of a lifespan-slashing chronic disease, like heart disease, type 2 diabetes, and hypertension. The mental boost. Surprisingly, greater leg strength is also associated with improved cognition and brain health. Dr. Leone says strength training in general boosts the release of brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDNF, a protein that supports everything from learning and memory to staving off neurodegenerative disease. But there may be something special about legs in particular. A 2015 study, which followed 324 healthy adult female twins for a decade, found that the twin with the greater leg power performed better on cognitive tests and had higher volumes of gray matter, tissue in your brain that enables you to think, reason, move, learn, and function. Resistance training is a pretty powerful mood booster too, yet another essential piece of living well. In one 2022 study of 685 women with depression, ages 59 and older, lower body strength was linked with health-related quality of life and some improved depression symptoms. In another 2022 pilot study of 41 women, ages 60 to 76, doing a full body resistance training regimen 3 times a week for 12 weeks led not only to significant improvements in muscle strength, but also reduced symptoms of depression and anxiety. How to step it up? Ready to boost your legs and your lifespan? Michelle McDonald, CSCS, a strength and conditioning specialist and founder of the workout platform The Wonder Women, recommends aiming for 2 lower body sessions per week, each 30 to 45 minutes long. On off days, opt for other kinds of movement. For example, Dr. Leone says that additional types of leg dominant activities such as hiking, stair climbing, and Pilates can complement but not replace your leg workouts by improving muscular endurance, stability, and coordination. And don't forget to increase your protein intake, which is just as essential as lifting to build and preserve muscle mass. Dr. Leone advises aiming for 0.7 to 1 gram of protein per pound of target body weight per day, which would amount to 105 to 150 grams for a 150-pound woman. If you need a lower body gym routine, try the following from McDonald, which uses 5 key moves to work out all of your leg muscles. For each move, do 2 or 3 sets of 8 to 12 repetitions each. Total beginners should stick to the body weight alone until they nail form. Once the moves feel easy, add light dumbbells or a kettlebell to the mix and keep increasing the weight over time. The load should feel challenging but manageable until the last 1 or 2 reps, where the effort should noticeably increase, says McDonald. Number 1, squats. For alignment, core, and lower body strength. How to do it? Stand with your feet hip or shoulder width apart. Drive your knees out over your feet and lower your hips, keeping your torso neutral and engaging your core and pelvic floor. Go as deep as you can without pain, maintaining your form and not hunching over. Hold, then slowly come back up to standing position. Want to level up? Make it harder by holding a dumbbell or kettlebell to your chest, or see if you can squat down lower without support. Number 2, hip hinges. For safe lifting, balance, and back pain prevention. How to do it? Stand with your legs hip width apart, knees slightly bent, and spine neutral. Push your hips back as if you're closing a car door with your butt, keeping your spine straight. You should feel a stretch in the hamstrings as the hips travel backward and your upper body moves forward. Drive the hips forward to stand tall again. Level up. For more resistance, stand on an exercise band and hold on to the ends with both hands while you hinge. Increase the band's tension to make it harder. When that feels good, try holding a dumbbell or kettlebell in front of you, lowering it down toward the floor in front of you with control as you hinge forward before you return to standing. Number 3, lunges. For hip stability and single leg strength. How to do it? You start in a standing position and step your right leg out in front. Lower yourself down slowly as far as you can go, or until your back knee brushes the floor. Your right foot should stay flat on the floor, and your right knee should be in line over your toes. If you feel wobbly, hold on to the edge of a counter or chair. Keep your torso tall and engage your glutes to keep your hips stable. Slowly lift back up to standing, then repeat, this time with your left leg in front. To level up, increase how far you go down first, then add weights to one or both hands. Glute bridges for mobility and hip strength. How to do it? Lie on your back, knees bent, feet hip width apart. Gently engage your core, then squeeze your glutes to push your hips up until your body forms a straight line from shoulders to knees. Hold at the top for 10 seconds before releasing slowly back to the floor. Level up, place a dumbbell or plate across your hips, or place an exercise band around your hips, and anchor the ends under your hands for extra resistance. Number 5, calf raises for ankle strength and balance. How to do it? Stand with your feet under your hips. Press into the balls of your feet and lift the heels up as high as possible. Hold at the top without wobbling for a few seconds, then lower down with control. Pause and repeat. If needed, lightly touch a wall or chair for balance support. Hold each rep for longer or add ankle weights for more of a challenge. Your legs have taken you places your whole life. Why not show some appreciation? Shifting your focus to make them stronger will ensure you remain reactive, mobile, and independent, not to mention cognitively and mentally strong for years to come. Women start noticing changes pretty quickly with simple strength training routines, says McDonald. Getting up the stairs gets easier. Getting up from the floor is less of a chore, and you get tired less. All the more reason to step to it. What's that weird ringing in your ear? It might be menopause. This article is by Lisa Arbetter. We had an expert unpack this surprising, buzzworthy symptom. Sure, we know that menopause is behind night sweats and hot flashes, but is it to blame for everything that goes awry when you're over a certain age? In this series, we're unpacking some of the funkiest health woes people encounter in midlife to see which can be chalked up to the change and which are, well, you know, just a you thing. Just when you thought perimenopause couldn't make you feel any more unhinged, you start hearing things. A ringing, a hum, a buzz, maybe even a whoosh. Whatever the sound, it hijacks your focus, messes with your sleep, and makes you wonder, have I finally lost it? You haven't, but you may have tinnitus, hearing a sound that has no external source. While there are multiple kinds of tinnitus, for most people it's a symptom of changes to the hearing system itself, says Craig Casper, an audiologist who specializes in tinnitus. Anyone else hearing that? Here's what's happening. Over time, the tiny hair cells in your inner ear can be damaged by everything from aging and medications to years of loud music. When these cells can't send clear signals, your brain starts searching for sound, and not finding it creates its own. For most, the brain is able to naturally filter out this phantom sound, allowing it to fade into the background unnoticed. But for others, it gets pushed into the spotlight by a stressful event or a major life change. The limbic system, which governs emotion, suddenly pays attention and flags the sound as a possible threat, explains Casper. That's when the vicious loop begins. Stress fuels perception, perception fuels stress, sleep suffers, and the sound seems to grow louder. Hormonal shifts can also be a trigger. Estrogen and progesterone are thought to have neuroprotective effects, Casper says. Without them, your brain becomes more reactive. Also, when hormone levels swing or drop, many women see sleep and stress changes that can exacerbate tinnitus. Turn down that racket. While tinnitus isn't always curable, it's highly treatable. Start with the basics. Consistent sleep, moderate exercise, think walks or yoga, not marathons, and long exhale breathing to calm your nervous system. If you have hearing loss, hearing aids can improve the sound input the brain is missing, and nutritional factors may matter too. Vitamin D deficiency, for example, has been linked to worse tinnitus, but the evidence for treatment with supplements is still limited and mixed. Talk to your doctor or an audiologist for specific recommendations. Depending on your tinnitus' cause and severity, your doctor may suggest one or more of these evidence-based options. Cognitive Behavioral Therapy, CBT, the gold standard for breaking the attention anxiety tinnitus loop. linear device, an FDA-approved device pairing sound with gentle electrical stimulation on the tongue. It changes the way the brain handles phantom sounds by providing stimuli to the ear and tongue at the same time, and has been shown to reduce symptoms and help patients habituate to their tinnitus, Casper says. Tinnitus restraining therapy, TRT. A longer-term approach, 12 to 18 months, that helps many people adapt by using a combo of counseling and sound therapy. With the right treatment, most people can habituate to the point where they're barely aware of it, Casper says. In other words, your brain can learn to treat tinnitus the way you might treat a man on the street telling you to smile. It'll just tune it out. We have run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Daily. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Tyra Banks, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Oprah Daily is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. But